This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
So we've been telling our kids forever that growing up in the 80s was the best time to be a teenager. But they didn't believe us. That is until Stranger Things came along. And now they're asking us if we still have our Walkman. So was the 80s the best decade to grow up in? BMXs, banana skateboards, crimpers, roller skates, side ponytails and a perm, parents who never knew where we were and phones on the wall. Did you grow up in the 80s? And now are your kids trying to be Stranger Things kids? And are you happy about that? Was the 1980s the ultimate childhood decade? And also this hour, we're learning to love and be at home more with insects. Many of us now are even removing spiders rather than killing them. We think actively about attracting insects in our gardens with what we plant. But where do we stand with flies? Do we still think of flies as spreading disease with the greatest of ease? Well, some folk out there think that it's time that the fly had a rebrand. So how do you feel about that? But at 11:30, as always on a Friday, Jacinta Parson joins me and we're talking growing up in the 80s and why it was the best.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
By now, you would have seen some of the extraordinary images of the floodwaters that have pretty much inundated Wye River and around that area, impacting everything from cars, tents and caravans. So far, thankfully, there have been no reports of injuries. Yet earlier this week, we spoke about bushfire insurance, and now we're talking about flood insurance and how events like yesterday, what that means for holiday park owners and operators, what it means for caravan hire operators, caravan owners, and what it means for you, the holiday maker. How will it impact where you can go and how much it costs? Nikki Hutley is an independent economist and counsellor with the Climate Council. Nikki, we spoke just days ago about how bushfire will impact insurance, how it will impact where we holiday and where we live. When you look at flash flooding and some of the extreme images we've seen of multiple cars being washed out into the ocean and caravans on their side inundated with water. And these are often cars worth, you know, close to $100,000 and caravans that can be hundreds of thousands of dollars. What does this mean for, I guess, first things first, caravan park owners and operators?
Yeah, it's a bit of climate whiplash, isn't it? From fires to extreme flooding, it's quite alarming. And unfortunately, fossil fuel burning, emissions-driven climate changes and these unnatural disasters are just getting more frequent as we get more and more global warming. And it is infecting the insurance market. Predominantly, though, that is on fixed properties. And so if you're a caravan park owner and operator in one of those high-risk areas, and Wye River is definitely one where the risk of is a lot higher. We've got around 12% of properties are at moderate or high risk from combination of hazards, but flooding particularly, then your premiums are going to be a lot higher. And we know that in the past, we've had obviously severe flooding in various parts of the east coast of Australia, the eastern states over the recent years, and some of those caravan parks are no longer. They just can't get insurance, and it's not just against the property insurance but liability insurance. So it's becoming more and more problematic for the fixed abode.
Well, we sort of run the risk, don't we? We saw a lot of caravan parks disappear and units and cabins and things that were seen to be more profitable and more desirable going up in a lot of coastal towns. If you then add the element of, well, owner-operators just simply won't be able to afford to run a caravan park, that is a big part of Australian life that slowly could just disappear.
Oh, and it's a huge part of Australian life. I mean, I'm on the Central Coast and not far from where I'm sitting now. You know, there's a beautiful little caravan park at Pretty Beach. And you think, well, it's not just river inundation, it's coastal inundation. You know, that some of these places just might not exist, and they're certainly under threat from extreme events, but also from those chronic events that are, you know, the slower, longer acting, like rising sea levels. So, you know, to think that our typical Australian holiday is going to be threatened. And interestingly enough, we did some at the Climate Council research just in December, and you know, people are already worried about how their bush camping, it might be affected. You know, 75% of younger Australians, 18 to 34, were either very or at least somewhat concerned about their travel plans being disrupted from our typical. So we are worrying about this, and quite rightly.
And for caravan owners, we've seen a rise in people purchasing caravans. You know, some of them, the more modest caravans we were used to. We're going to be talking about the 1980s a little later. So some of them, you know, maybe the wind catcher, dream catcher Windsors that we remember of the 80s. However, some of them now are so pimped out and worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. And to see them literally bobbing around in floodwaters, do caravan owners have the same level of insurance as homeowners?
So no. So caravans and cars, it typically are seen as, because they are you can move them, unlike your home. If you have a, I mean, obviously the Wye River, it was very sudden. It happens extremely quickly, and there wasn't necessarily time to respond. So we saw that you know, those incredible scenes that we have. But typically, the insurance council tells me that with cars and vehicles generally, the biggest threat far and away is theft. And then, you know, obviously after that kind of accident. So this tends to be, at the moment, something we don't see a lot of, and something that's, you know, very frequently. And so is when the risk rises, obviously premiums rise. And we've got to think about that this, you know, in the places that, as you said before, where we tend to go, they're going to be higher risk. And unless we act on climate change and do more to limit global warming to, it's already gone, you know, to 1.5 degrees average the last 3 years. If we can't do something about that here and around the world, then it is going to start to have an impact on where we go, what we can afford to do. But at the moment, we're not seeing that come through to premiums just yet.
Nikki Hutley is with you, independent economist and counsellor with the Climate Council. Nikki, I'm just sort of imagining someone like, I mean, you can take the Wye River Caravan Park, but you could take any of any coastal holiday park, caravan park around Australia, and thinking, okay, well, I need top level flood and fire insurance, and putting those two side by side, not only to look over the span of a year, but the span of a week. And I just wonder whether that next generation of people wanting to run and to own these types of places will just disappear altogether. And on top of that, families or individuals who want to permanently rent a caravan spot at a caravan park, you know, if you were lucky enough to have one, or a mate that had one, and the rents are quite expensive already to rent a permanent spot at a caravan park, it's going to come in to all of those areas.
Oh, look, it's a huge, I mean, there's a whole load of things that are wrapped up into that, you know, the points that you're making there. One is that in some caravan parks, you know, low-income households who can't afford to purchase or even rent a home are, you know, sitting in regional caravan parks because that is what they can afford, you know, where they can afford to live. And if they can't get insurance, even their, you know, those modest homes that they have are vulnerable. And we know from stats from the Insurance Council that, and from the Actuaries Institute, that it is the most vulnerable people who are actually, you know, in terms of income, who are also most exposed to the extreme weather events fueled by climate change. So they are facing really difficult problems. You've got a whole tourism industry that is facing challenges around the insurance that they will be able to get. I mean, our way of life is being affected. And this is, you know, I think people are finally waking up to the fact that you know, the dire warnings that we've had for a long time about the impacts of climate change, they are just being brought home both to us, you know, very much to Australians in recent years, but right around the world in terms of these terrible unnatural disasters that we are seeing, you know, with relentless regularity. Yeah. And it's you know, we've got to be doing more. But I will just say on a more positive note, that we, you know, because there are, you know, I mean, obviously not for the poor people who are affected. And thank goodness, so far, touch wood, no one's, you know, lost their lives over this, which has happened in the past in caravan parks. But we, resilience and adaptation is a really important part of this story. Reducing risk, if not from climate change that's already embedded, certainly we've got to address future climate change, but we can also need to have adaptation. So things like, you know, river levees, making sure we've got adequate fire breaks, all of those things are an important part of this story as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's been quite startling and in your face, and just that stark difference between, you know, we've got CFA firefighters who were quite literally within 48 hours fighting a fire and then rescuing people from floods in the same area. And even as Victorians, as we get used to living in extreme weather events, I think it's kind of rocked a lot of people that we can have such extreme events butt up against each other. Nikki, it's always good to get your thoughts. Thank you. Did you grow up in the 80s, Nikki?
I'm a little bit older, but I did have a Walkman and I loved it to death. And I remember the first one that I had being, yeah, it was such a big thing. And I thought I was so cool because actually went skiing with it on, and I was skiing down the slopes with my Walkman on, you know, like nowadays I think people think. So I've been through the Walkman, the MP3 player, and of course now we just stream on our phones. So technology is interesting.
It's all coming back. I know. I think I had a mauve Walkman, but my first one was red, and I can still remember the sound of it shutting and clipping together, and had a big silver thing on the back that you could hook onto your high-waisted bubblegum jeans. They were the days. Nikki, thank you.
As long as they don't bring back shoulder pads.
I don't mind a shoulder pad, just saying. Nikki Hutley, independent economist and counsellor with the Climate Change Council. Coming up to 20 minutes after 11, my name's Rochelle. This is The Conversation Hour. Just after 11.30, Jacinta Parsons will be joining me, as she does every Friday. And today we're talking about the fact that our kids, many of our kids, want to be Stranger Things kids, which means they want to be a 1980s kid. We've been telling them all along that growing up in the 80s was the best. They didn't believe us, but now they do. Didn't want to say I told you so, Philip, in Yarra Glen, but we told them so.
We did. That's right. Yeah. And my son and his friend this morning were watching BMX Bandits because it was on SBS World Movies today.
Classic.
And it was fantastic. I said, this is where we first saw Nicole Kidman.
That's it. And she's embraced her curls again. There was lots of articles around Nicole has embraced her 1980s curls again.
Yep. It's classic.
It is a classic.
Yeah. And they were loving it. They were seeing aspects of how we pretended we used to live at that time, if these kids running around and fighting off the bad guys.
There's a great text. Yeah, exactly. That's right. I mean, there's something about watching these kids grow up in Stranger Things as well. But this text from Nick, it says, growing up in the 80s was the best. Our parents did know where we were, and that was by whichever lawn had our bikes on them. Sometimes the bikes were made up of other parts of bikes, a BMX with a different seat, whatever worked. My favourite part was putting cardboard in the spokes and the peg so that the spokes made a cool noise when you pedalled. We thought we were the ants' pants. Can you remember Spokey Dokies? See, I didn't make my own. I went to Venture. Remember that shop? Venture on Adventure. And I bought Spokey Dokies. That was a big day in my household. Liz is in Swan Hill. Hi, Liz.
Hello. How are you?
You grew up in the 80s?
I did grow up in the 80s. I spent all of my 80s every Friday night, every Saturday night, roller skating. That's what we did. Yeah. If you were looking for us, we were at the skating rink. I grew up in Melbourne, and you know, you had your Fabergé jeans on and your blue mascara and your blue eyeliner. And
I've forgotten about blue mascara. Gosh, that blue mascara was good, wasn't it? It was really electric blue.
Oh, it was electric blue. And then you had the watermelon coloured lipstick and nail polish.
Yeah. Did you have Silhouette hairspray? You know, that black can that was.
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah. And there was always like an extra 25% on the can.
And you know what? You can still find it, and there still is.
Well, if you wanted to crimp your fringe and have it really stay up, because I styled my hair on Dannii Minogue from Young Talent Time circa 1985, where she had the perm and the crimped fringe. The only way to keep your crimped fringe like really straight and erect the entire day was with Silhouette hairspray.
Absolutely. And your whole hair would just move in one big piece.
You couldn't get it out. It was disgusting. Oh, Liz, we're going to talk to JP about not only what it was like growing up in the 80s, what your bedroom was like, you know, what posters you had on the wall, but also just to sort of pull apart, you know, sometimes we look back at these ideas through rose-coloured glasses and we think, oh, everyone thinks that their decade was the best decade to grow up in, well, you know, to a certain degree. But was the 80s, like, is it real? I mean, is this like scientific evidence now that growing up in the 80s was actually the best? This text, two words, Garfield phone. I had one. Does that mean I'm spoiled? I was an only child. I think that was the epitome of being spoiled as an only child, was if you had a Garfield phone. And I made my whole family use it. It was in the hallway with our brown and white shag pile carpet. I made our whole family use the Garfield phone, including my dad, who was, you know, the local copper. And you'd pick up, if you've never seen a Garfield phone, you'd pick up a little piece off his back. And when you did, his big kind of bulbous eyes would open and close.
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Louis the Fly, I'm Louis the Fly, straight from rubbish tip to you, spreading disease with the greatest of ease, straight from rubbish tip to you. I'm bad and mean and mighty unclean, a prey to no one except the man with the can of morphine.
But have you put the mortine away? We are learning to love insects and critters and creepy crawlies more and more. Many of us now remove spiders, for example, right? We don't kill them, we remove them. And we actively think about trying to attract insects to our garden with what we plant. But where do we stand with flies? And how much do we know about flies? And have we stereotyped flies? Question I never thought I'd ask. But do we still think of them as spreading disease with the greatest of ease? Well, many of us don't love them, but some folk out there think that it's time that the fly had a rebrand. One of them is Dr. Keith Bayliss. He's an entomologist at the CSIRO, the Australian Insect Collection. And you're a part of a kid's book and some research called Very Stinky Fly Hunt, Keith, amongst many things. Have we got the fly all wrong, or do they spread disease with the greatest of ease?
There are definitely some flies, like the bush fly, the blowfly, that could be described by that the jingle. But the thing is that there's actually over 150,000 different species of flies that we know about, and probably a million total out there that we don't know about. So we can't paint all flies with the same brush, I think.
So what's, in terms of the pecking order and the chain of importance when it comes to insects and the role that they play, where do flies sit? I mean, do they do anything important? Like, if they disappeared, would it matter? That's probably an awful thing to ask you, Keith, I know. But if you imagine a world with no flies, what would happen?
So flies are among the most diverse insects and also very diverse in terms of what they eat. They live in water and soil. They attack plants, other animals, fungus. They're decomposers. There's just absolutely everything out there that some fly larvae will be doing. So I think without flies, anything like that would disrupt the ecosystem. Birds, spiders, et cetera, wouldn't have food. But the bigger issue would just be the amount of decomposing biological material that would pile up.
The role of flies as pollinators, I remember when we had a lot of issues and a lot of disease that was potentially going to hit our honeybee population and some of the concerns that everyone from almond growers to all sorts of people that rely on pollination. And we learned that flies play a role there. I mean, are they a vital part of pollination?
Yeah, so fly larvae are down in the soil. Those are maggots, and then they have an egg larva, pupa, adult, and the adults fly around. That's the ones we're more familiar with. And so the adults also eat a number of things, and many of them are pollinators. They visit flowers, get nectar and then can move pollen from flower to flower. In some ecosystems, they're the most important pollinators, alpine, very cold areas, more dry, beachy areas. And then in some crops, they're the most important pollinators as well. So they're very important for mangoes. And then the biggest claim to fame is the cacao tree, chocolate. Without any flies, there would not be any chocolate.
Well, see, we've buried the headline, haven't we, really? I mean, that's what everyone needs to know. Without flies, there's no chocolate.
And it's a very particular small type of fly, a little sand fly that pollinates the chocolate tree. So you're welcome to express your ire against bush flies, but there's so many others out there doing a lot of interesting things.
So are they just some types of flies that are important? I mean, there's flies and then there's flies. So, for example, I like to keep our back door open. I like fresh air, but at the same time, you know, you're going to get flies. And I've warned my family, I'm like, you know what? I saw quite a few flies buzzing around. They were on the apples. If you're going to eat an apple out of the fruit bowl, make sure you wash it. If my daughter, for example, you know, pray tell, didn't listen to me and didn't wash the apple and a fly's been on it, is it actually dangerous?
I think you should probably still give it a wash, and if a fly gets in your glass of water, pour yourself a new one. But they're quite a bit more clean than what we fear. So they're always cleaning themselves. They do like a preening ritual. And when we try to sequence dangerous bacteria or filth pathogens from the flies, they don't really carry very much. But it's better safe than sorry, I think.
Now, there's a new kids book that draws on your research, and it's called The Very Stinkly Fly Hunt. Why go turn to kids? Why attract or try and educate kids about flies?
Yeah, so this came out of some research I'm doing studying pest fruit flies and their relatives. So some of the major crop pests are types of fruit flies, but it's only a small fraction. It's a few species out of all of the thousands of species of fruit flies and their relatives. So we wanted to sequence their genomes and build an evolutionary tree to understand what's the difference between pests and non-pests. So one of the really interesting flies in that group is something called Clysa australis. It's the only member of its family, its higher level group, found in Australia. And it somewhat looks like a fruit fly, particularly in the end of the abdomen. It has an egg-laying device that looks like a fruit fly, but it instead is known from bat caves. It probably eats bat leavings. So it was described in the 1960s just from one cave, and then it later found turned up in dunnies, in drop toilets in national parks. But since then, it hadn't been seen since the 1980s. Again, a great decade. So I was really interested in trying to find new fresh material of that fly, both to see what it was up to and to sequence its genome and place it in an evolutionary tree. So I looked all around. I checked lots and lots of dunnies, some in beautiful national parks, some in less favorable states of repair. But where I finally found it instead was in a monitoring trap. So we put out these large flight intercept monitoring traps to catch lots of different insects, mosquitoes, both to find new species, but also to monitor pests. So it turned up in this trap, very far away from where it was previously found, in northern New South Wales, and turned up in southern New South Wales. So with that information, I was able to track down some drop toilets where the flies were dancing on the walls and the ceiling, and we were able to get fresh material, and now we can study it, both that fly and the its relationship to the pest fruit flies. So I just wrote a little newsletter article saying I'd found this fly, which had not been seen for a long time. And where I found it, of course, was in these drop toilets. And that kind of tickled the fancy of my colleague here in CSIRO, who got the idea to write a children's book about it, to show that, you know, even things that are gross or stinky or poopy can be fun and a source of discovery about Australia's biodiversity.
The fact that you're doing your research in drop toilets, that is true dedication. Just finally, and again, want to keep my house open, don't want to be afraid of flies, don't want to be anti-flies, but at the same time I was thinking, is there a type of plant that I can plant near and around our doors that would be almost like a natural repellent to flies? Is that, just as my final question, Keith, is that possible?
I'm not aware of a plant like that, but what I would recommend is to plant native flowering vegetation. because insects are in trouble. In a lot of cases, the populations of native insects are on the decline. And one way to definitely help is to give them access to more native flowers.
Thank you so much for your insights and for your work. The fact that you're doing this research around drop toilets, that is hats off. That is dedication, Keith. Thank you.
Thanks.
See, many of us won't enter them, just generally, no matter how busting we are. Dr. Keith Bayliss, entomologist at the CSIRO, a part of the Australian Insect Collection. Just after 11:30, this is The Conversation Hour, and it's a Friday, and this year, yes, every Friday, Jacinta Parsons will be joining me. And today we're looking at our kids and many of our kids who want to be Stranger Things kids. And Stranger Things kids are 1980s kids. We've been telling them that the 1980s was the best time to grow up. They didn't believe us. And then Stranger Things came along and now they believe us. But Richard's in Caulfield North. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Rochelle. How are you?
Good. Flies.
Flies.
Yeah. Are you anti, pro?
I think I'm pro for the weirdest of reasons.
Yeah.
I just did a walk from, Brighton Yacht Club on the bay to Elwood.
Mm-hmm.
And there were loads and loads of flies. So I decided I'd use it as a mindfulness exercise.
Oh, get out.
So I had to resist swat, snort, and blow, and just sit there, see if I could sit in the discomfort of the moving boats.
Was that awesome. How'd you go? How long did you last?
I got 2 snorts, 1 swallow, and a wait.
There's never the strength of a television presenter when they are doing a live cross and there is a fly like on the top of their lip or trying to enter up to their nose and they don't budge, right? They don't flinch. That is true strength.
I never realised they tickle so much. So
yeah,
I just have to be here to say I salute
Jacinta
you.
Oh, Parsons, hello.
You said don't talk, but I can't not. He learnt the art of fly up nose.
Yeah, and remember Costanza when he's like, I think I was swallowing a fly.
Oh, shut up now.
Oh, good on you, Richard. Please. Lovely to speak with you. Anyway, 1980s, was it actually the best time to grow up?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
How good is this? Yeah, I've got actions. I might even still have tickets.
Can you do them? Because we are filmed right now.
Yeah.
Do it. Okay.
No, so
what's it look like?
My 1980s bestie, Christy Edwards, who I grew up with.
I'm so jealous about her.
Yeah, we had a dance troupe that we created. We even went in a Stedford, believe it or not. And she's this
and
tiny.
You wore leotards, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. She was this tiny, tiny little thing, still is. And I was kind of a bit of a chubby kid, so we were the complete opposite. Anyway, our dance troupe was called After Dark. And this, we did routines to this. We
Show
sold
us.
Tickets. Oh, I can't remember.
I'll describe. No, there's like eyes, there's 2 fingers going across, and she's got her teeth over her lower lip. Was
and
that
there
part
would
of
have
it?
Been a little bit of.
Okay. Remember. Like stopping. Hands up. I'm just telling the radio audience.
So we've been telling our kids forever that growing up in the 1980s was the best. You know, get off your screens, go outside, ride a BMX, you know, have our childhood. And they would roll their eyes. That is until Stranger Things came along, which has gone deep into 80s nostalgia, references from everything from The Goonies, Stand By Me, E.T.
Oh, sleepovers when you had the VHS with Bugsy Malone and Goonies. Have you seen that? Have you seen Don't Watch Goonies Again, please,
yeah,
everyone?
Yeah, there's a few where we've gone to rewatch them and then I'm like,
I reckon 95% of them are actually more of an education in consent.
So
but
today
anyway.
I want to kind of do a little bit of an experiment as to whether or not we are just looking back at this decade through rose-coloured glasses. Because, like, there's a text here that says, surely we're just all nostalgic and sentimental and wishful about the past because we were young and it was our youth. Whatever generation you're from, now just being an adult sucks.
Yeah, but can I just say, was 80s when they designed the hypercolour T-shirts?
Yeah, man.
Like, hello, you can't look back at that and say that's just nostalgia. That was a moment of fashion genius.
The crimper?
The baggy jeans.
The bubblegum jeans.
Oh, bubblegums. And I just couldn't, I wasn't that girl and I was never allowed to get the sports girl bag, you know, where all the beautiful girls and they had their scrunchies.
Scrunchies, the side ponytail.
Do you know what? You and I just admitted to each other something in the office about the side ponytail. I actually had an intervention pulled on me in 1990 when I was 16.
Decades.
I went too far into the 90s with a side ponytail. It shocked me. In all my school photos, I've got a side pony. I loved it, but apparently it wasn't that cool.
So I think that it actually was the best decade. Like, we're not just being nostalgic. That I think if there were, if this is right now, some kind of PhD social experiment,
of course it is,
that the answer would be, yeah.
Okay. I am largely on board with this because there's not much that you've said to me that I would say that was trauma. Hair crimpers, bring it back. Like, let's crimp again like we did last summer. But I've got to bring in one little bit of evidence. Just a little thought, just a little thought. I think the parents of the 80s were the worst.
Pants or parents?
Parents.
Oh, yeah, they were terrible.
Parents. I've got a couple of stories, really quick ones, just to illustrate.
I think my parents were just like,
whatever.
Drunk and swinging. I mean, I have no idea.
Your parents swang? Is that
know.
The past tense of when
I'm
you've swung?
I'm starting to look back on moments. I think there might have been nude swimming.
Because those parties were insane
in
the 80s.
So we had the pool, right?
Oh, my
so
God.
So you get drunk
Did
parents
you?
In the 80s.
Above ground or below?
Below.
Who are you?
We were popular, let's just say that.
In Moe, you had a below.
No, this is Trafalgar below. Yeah,
far
kidney-shaped
out.
With pebble mix.
That would have cost a pretty penny. Back in the 80s, that's like $1 million.
My mum had to sell Tupperware.
Your mum sold Tupperware, that's the other thing.
To fund her.
And Mary Kay, remember the pink cars?
Yeah, Nutramedics.
I can't breathe. This is too much. Nutramedics. Okay, we're just not going to keep screaming stuff at each other because it's too much. Please call us and scream at us back. Was it the best decade? But I just want to throw this down.
Parents, bad.
Okay. There's a couple of examples that I've been gathering, and I really want to write a book on this. One of my friends said she was driving to school in the 80s. She fell out of the car, and her dad kept driving, found out she wasn't there, just came back and put her in. Nothing was mentioned.
My best mate's mum ran over my best mate's foot.
Just like, whatever.
Go to school.
I got forgotten at school many times. Imagine if that happened now. There'd be an interrogation, investigation. Another one of our content director here, whose parents I hope are not listening, she didn't eat her vegetables one night. And so her dad said, I'm going to drive you to the forest at night and leave you there. And he did. And he did do that. There was just like negligence. We were like, we didn't have, like, we had Holdens and no belts and
so
we survived the 80s.
Yeah, we did survive the 80s, and that's part of it. So there was one or two saying, yes, our parents were reckless, but, you know, there's things that we didn't know now, and you've got to look at it through a serious lens, and that's why we overparent now. But I don't know, like, seriously, I mean, take me to Jacinta Parsons' bedroom.
Okay.
1985. What did it look like?
Well, look, of course, I eventually found bras.
Ooh.
Rick Astley was my first cassette that my nana bought for me, which is, I love that you just took that on as a reasonable thing to say.
Mm.
But I had a little weird twist.
I wasn't into bras. They played at the Warrigal Performing Arts Centre. I didn't go.
You didn't go when
I went
did
to
they
John
play
Barnum,
at Warrigal?
I went and saw
Auntie. John Farnham, but do you know when he did that with the You're the Voice with the I want to call it an instrument that's got a big bag,
bagpipes.
Yes, bagpipes. Wasn't every single one of your friends in the background of that video clip? Everyone I knew was. I wasn't. My mum was so obsessed with Whispering Jack. Anyway. What am I saying?
Your bedroom.
Okay. Yeah, so I had posters up for sure, but I went through 1988 when I was the form captain. I had a map of the world on my wall, and every day I would go to school with the different coloured scrunchies in my hair that represented a different country.
Who are you?
That's what I'm telling you. You asked me whether we would have been friends.
Would we?
Would you have been friends? I mean, I was form captain. Wasn't like I was absolutely ostracized.
See, I had posters on my wall. I didn't like bras. I was Boy George, so Culture Club and Brian Mannix.
You were a ex-maniac.
Yeah, yeah. So they were my posters. Best mate, as I said, Christy Edwards, she didn't go to my school, so we were like weekend buddies.
Cara Williams was mine.
Her family was kind of, their house was quite posh. Like it was mega 80s, you know, the raked roof, pine, everywhere you looked, pine, oh, pine.
Cara had the same thing. And they would clean on a Saturday morning together as a family.
They ate at a breakfast bar.
Oh, there was breakfast bars.
That was pine. I know.
Like, oh my God, think about the food we ate as well.
And they had like pine bench bar stools that had like mustard coloured vinyl seats that you sat on. Anyway, we haven't
right
caught
now.
Up, so this is why we won't shut up. 1-300-222-774. Was the 80s actually the best? Take us to your bedroom. It sounds a little creepy, don't mean it to. Sort of mid 80s.
Oh, I do that.
1-300-222-774.
Sorry, I haven't done radio for a while, so I'm talking over you, which is what I do, apparently, people say. Anyway, someone has texted through with a very controversial text. The 80s was the decade that music forgot, apart from The Cure. In the 90s, I would have said that.
See?
Because I changed. But now reflecting, far out. Come on, talking heads.
Talking this today because Stranger Things has catapulted a lot of young people into wanting to live a 1980s lifestyle. The soundtrack to Stranger Things is peak 1980s. And some of the songs, I have to say, it didn't go your typical Wham and Boy George. It is, well, let me play you this.
Oh, everything about this.
Yeah.
This is
like
what
when they were unashamed of the synthesizer.
Yeah.
Do you want to get a dance trip going now in our lives?
After Dark 2.
Yes.
Yeah. Still After Dark. If this was such a good song. Hang on. Here we go.
But there was a scene in Stranger Things, I think it was season 3. So there is a character called Dusty. He has a little crush and a little romance with a girl called Susie. And he's trying to get some information out of Susie because they're trying to save the world. And Susie is super smart. And Susie will only give him this sort of scientific calculation if Dusty does a certain thing for her, and that is to sing this song.
See in her face. How good is this?
Oh my God.
Yeah. That is so exciting.
The never ending story.
Here we go.
I don't know the words.
Oh, it's so good.
So good.
I'm getting emotional with these text messages. Oh. Billy Katz.
Oh.
Do you remember my granddad made me one? And this one, having a Walkman, which your daughter asked you the other day whether you had one still.
Yeah.
Listening to Casey Kasem on American Top 40 on Sunday night, that is exactly what I did.
So 1980s music, there's the Daggy, there's the Rick Astley's, but then there is the super cool. And it's been 40 years. It's not just us that's into this because our very own Matt Neal, ABC journalist, who's joined us from, I think, where are you? In Warrnambool, Matt?
I am in sunny Warrnambool today.
Is it sunny?
Where it's always 1986.
It is always 1986.
It is sunny. I spent 1986 in Warrnambool, I have to say. I spent a lot of time in the WAS back in the early 80s.
1986, and I was grade 6.
There was a lot of mullet action, I think, back then.
Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah, mullet. So, Matt, you have kind of deep dived into music in 1986, 40 years. I mean, listening to the Stranger Things soundtrack, I got teary, I have to say. I was taken back to my nana's lounge room, dancing with my cousins. Life was just different. Was 1986 like peak musical genius?
I'll be controversial and say that the greatest decade was the 90s, but that I think just goes to the point of it's about when you come of age, I think, is where your rose-coloured glasses were first affixed to your head, I think. But 1986 is, every year has its amazing albums. Music changes so much. 1986 is kind of when MTV starts to rule the world. So you start to see these iconic film clips. I mean, we can't talk about 1986 without talking about Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel.
Yes.
Like, that film clip changes everything. And the biggest selling album of 1986 is Madonna's True Blue. Now, there is an artist who realizes, wow, film clips can be everything. If I look in a certain way and stand out from everyone else, then
can I tell you something peak 1986 about
Please
that
do.
Album? So at our milk bar, we had a man, Carlo, who worked with us, and he was like a genius. He was just so clever. And the local radio station, 3GG, was running a competition to win Madonna's True Blue album. I can't remember what the question was, but Carlo rang up 3GG and won me that album.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. What? Are you married to him right now? Huh? Are you married to him? There's hilarious text coming through. We're going to keep going with the music, but Imran Khan was on someone's wall as a poster. Love that deep dive into a little bit of cricketing joy.
So, Matt Neal, 1986 musically, what, I mean, are you looking at what was in the charts, what we were into? Is it when it broadened out a little bit?
Yeah, it's starting to broaden out. Hip-hop and metal have really breakthrough years in 1986. We get the first million-selling hip-hop album, which was Run DMC's Raising Hell, us Walk This Way, of course, a massive crossover hit. Hip-hop and rock come together and make beautiful babies. It also gives us It's Tricky and My Adidas, or My Adidas, depending on which school you went to. But it also...
Adidas.
Well, yeah, I know, but anyway. they, and that also, a couple of months later, it gives us hip-hop's first 10 million copy-selling album in Beastie Boys' License to Ill, which is, if you think about what rock music was doing back then, it was all like Bon Jovi and hair metal and stuff. Beastie Boys brought the rock attitude from hip-hop and spoke to a whole generation of kids who were like, you know... You talked about parents. You know, rock rebellion is about dissing whatever your parents don't listen to and finding your own thing. Beastie Boys' License to Ill was
so
that
good.
Album.
But that album stood up for the test of time. I do now remember that I played violin in Box Hill Central, the Plaza Mall, to raise money over Christmas. And it was very daggy, of course. Had my violin out there. And these really cool kids came up and said, "What are you getting the money for?" And I said, "Tickets to the Poison concert."
Oh,
not true. Not even. Didn't
Death
do that.
Leopard.
Oh, well, I mean, I wasn't listening to Poison back then.
Yeah, but you were just trying to be cool. The compilations, I'm trying to remember if there was a really good, there was like 84 Through the Roof or 82 Through the Roof or, you know, 84 Heating Up. Or there was all those.
A lot of hotness, wasn't there?
There's a lot of hotness in the
80s.
There was a lot of ass cheek action on covers.
Yeah, was it? Something with Ripper? Was that one with the ass cheek on it, I think?
Yeah. Or maybe that was 70s.
Ripper 86, maybe. And I had Hot Hits 86 with, Angry Anderson suddenly.
Oh, yeah. I think I had that.
When Charlene and Scott got married.
Yeah, I think I had that. Matt Neal, if you had to pick a top 80s band or song, if you had to choose, what would it be?
This is so not mainstream, but my favourite album from 1986 is XTC's Skylarking, which half the listeners
God.
Might have heard of.
That one?
Yes,
yeah.
Dear God,
that's
which was a B-side. That was only on the B-side to one of the songs, and everyone flipped the record and played that, and then they added that song to the album. But that's my favourite album from 1986.
Matt Neal, you're not allowed to come on the ABC and have a cool album. Thank you.
No, not be classy.
See you later.
Okay, well, then it's Whispering Jack by John Farnham.
Now you're our friend. You can catch Matt's article on the ABC's website. Do you know which song I listen to? And this is taken from Stranger Things, I think. This might have been...
Is it Master of Puppets?
I can't even remember what episode this was in. Anyway, it's this one. Remember this?
You tell me that you want me.
Wait, you'll get it.
You tell me that you need me.
Yeah. Here we go.
You tell me that you love me. And I know that I'm right.
Yeah.
Because I
told
hear you. I hear the secrets that you keep.
Ooh.
When you're talking in your sleep.
You and I are bringing back, what was your dance routine, like your dance crew?
After Dark.
After Dark.
Oh, Chrissy Edwards, if you're listening, I mean, I call 1-300-222-774, but I'm sorry we've taken the name.
Someone just said ruffle skirts.
Ruffle skirts.
Yeah,
ruffle
I used to
skirts.
Wear that to, let's
balloon
just say
skirts.
It, church. That's what happened in the 80s for me.
Did you have a real or fake Cabbage Patch Kid?
Of course I had a fake one. I never got real stuff ever, 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 ever. Ever.
Abner,
I would see dresses and my mum would say, "Well, we can't afford it. I'll make it for you." she went through a whole period in the 80s of puff painting homemade tracksuits.
That's good.
And I would wear them.
That's the first White Fox. It was right there.
What's the White Fox?
That's, I shouldn't even mention brand
Please
names.
Please don't.
Abner Ita was the name of my Cabbage Patch Kid, anyhow.
Sam. Because you had a pool. Of course you had a real Cabbage Patch. Everything is changing. I thought you were like wearing, like, you know, clothes off the ground of the road.
No. I think we might have been the posh. Not posh. No, we weren't posh. But, yeah, we had a pool. But
how are you such a bogan then?
Hey, man, my mum sold Tupperware to get it. So,
true,
you know.
True. Thank you.
Sam in Sandy Point. Hello.
G'day.
Oh, sorry. Sam. We're so excited.
We are. What's you your are. 80s highlight?
I thought I'd, by the way, I think it was Ripper 77 with the Aztec.
Yeah, it was earlier. Yeah, thank you.
I remember the fashion highlights, which were Roller's Desert Boots.
Oh, my God. We
used to draw checks on them with a text. And then Fabergé stretch jeans, and I don't know whether you remember the Arnold Ross jumpers everyone used to wear with lemon blue and pink. Maybe that was another thing.
Where were you doing that? I'm going to look that up. I don't know Arnold Ross.
No, I'm trying to remember them. Hang on, were they crop tops?
No, they were just V-neck jumpers, but they were all in pastel colours.
Oh, okay, yeah, pastel. And did you wear them over your shoulder like Brian still likes to do? You know, the little jaunty.
Yeah, they're a bit of that. And yeah. The girls would wear them too and pop a gingham collar and put some pearls around it.
Pearls! We were talking about that the other day. Remember in the 80s where the chicks, teenagers, were pearl wild. But they were often the ones that also had a horse or a pony, you know?
Oh,
I think.
Bit Lady Di.
Yeah. Bit Lady Di.
I was scared of the horse girls.
I can't breathe today. This is so exciting.
Oh, Sam, thank you. If we're not reading out your texts, we're going to go through them all because they are just the best. Do kids still have posters on their walls? We used to get them from magazines. They aren't really a thing anymore. And we were talking about, JP, blue mascara. Remember the brand. I can mention this brand because I don't think it exists anymore. Remember Astralis?
Oh, didn't that open at Daimaroo? When did Daimaroo open? Was that in the 90s?
No, that was the 90s.
Was it? Oh, my God. Yes, I do remember. And I saw something by her just recently, Ali Daddo. You know, all of those Dolly magazines and the beautiful things that they did that I wasn't even allowed to buy Dolly.
We had the milk bar, right? So you would have hung out with me because we had the magazines and then just put them back on the shelf. And Nook's called through. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. My memories of the 80s are Pound Puppies, Garfield paraphernalia, burning hot metal slides, burning hot vinyl car seats.
There's another example of parenting gone wild.
See, annual trips to Queensland, no seat belts, playing Lego in the back and moving all around as we wished. Mum and Dad on the cask wine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was also one of those girls that wasn't allowed the sports girl paraphernalia, but I begged my mum one birthday for a sports girl T-shirt, wore it with pride the first day and spilt Milo right down at least the days before Nappy San, and I could never wear it again, and I was devastated.
Tell me, how did you do your Milo? Did you heat it up on the bottom of the cup and then stir it through,
lots of milk and then a big scoop of ice cream in the top, and then you just kind of ate the milk, ice cream, Milo combo.
Everything, every detail is
absolutely
essential, and I love it.
Down the white sports girl T-shirt. It was a sad
day. That was the classic. My daughter wanted to go shopping to sports girl a couple of weeks ago, and I think I was. I think I was more excited than she was, and now I'm like, hey, you want to go?
Do you want to get one of those bags? Do you want to get some stuff? Was Ken Doan big. 80s?
Yeah.
Was that 80s? Ken, and Jenny Key.
Yeah.
Ken Doan jumpers and Coogee jumpers that were a bit Ken Doan-esque.
West Coast Coolers.
Stop saying things to me. Oh, what about, no.
Stop saying things to me. I can't stop saying things
so
to
exciting.
You.
So exciting.
We've now gone and started going camping with our kids. This is the closest 80s experience we'll get. You've just got to let them go and let them have fun. So today's conversation started because a lot of teens are wanting to be Stranger Things teens, which basically means 1980s kids. And this summer I watched my daughter and her mates ride down a street, a little beach street, on their bikes, in their bathers, no helmets, and I felt so proud. It was probably my parents.
Okay, you're about to get a lot of text messages.
I know I am.
You're not. That's not okay. No. That's what happened to Stack Hats. You know, I wore a Stack Hat once from Melbourne to Beechworth in the car. because that was the kind of family we were. We wore it inside the
car. I was so proud. I'm like, that's childhood. That's summer. And they're riding slow, and it was
Sorry, it doesn't matter how fast you're going. I'm just doing this for everyone who wants to text her right now. Look at me. Children, everyone should wear a helmet all the time.
Thank you, Mum. Scott's in Ballarat. Hi, Scott.
Hey, hi.
Did you have a stack hat?
No, but I had a helmet when they came in. We had to legally start wearing them.
What about spooky dogs? Sorry, keep going. Sorry, Scott.
Yeah. My highlight or low light, and probably describes my whole 1980s, was an album I got for my 9th birthday in 1980. I was a member of the Village People side of the Kiss Village People War.
Yep.
And so I said to my parents, I'd love a Village People album for my 9th birthday, hoping it would be Can't Stop the Music soundtrack.
Yep.
Now, I believe my older brothers and sisters may have purchased this, but the album they got me was Live and Sleazy.
I'm not Can't Stop the Music, a little different.
And I toddled off to my Catholic primary school with my Live and Sleazy album by the Village People so we could play it in our classroom during lunchtimes.
Oh, that was my first film, Can't Stop the Music by the Village People. And you've just taken me back, Scott, to school, because in the 80s I got my hair tipped with the tipping cap.
You are unbelievably.
And the nuns tried to wash it out. And I'm like, you can't wash it out. It's bleach.
They actually tried to wash it out.
Yeah.
You are a different girl than I thought you were even 2 weeks ago when we were talking with each other.
Tipped hair.
Tipped hair, a pool, a real cabbage patch doll with a certificate.
And two earrings.
Oh, I didn't even have one.
Yeah. My auntie said, let's go around to the chemist, get his best.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. Renegade activity.
The chemist was fancy. This has been so much fun. If we didn't read out your text, I'm sorry. So I think if this was an experiment, if this is an actual experiment, then, yeah, the 80s was the best decade to grow
up. I can't wait to talk to the, the retro 80s kids. We need to get them on. What's going on? What are you excited about?
Yeah, what is it that you love? And we apologise that we've thrown out our Walkmans, we've thrown out our Cabbage Patch Kids, we've thrown out our crimpers, all of the things, the rah-rah skirts, all the stuff that you're buying. And yes, we do know the lyrics to all of the songs from the Stranger Things soundtrack. Oh, this has been too much fun. I'll be back with you on Monday. I'll speak with you soon. Take care.